hello and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I am your co-host, Brian Brown. These are the B.B. McKinney Studios. They are spacious. They are glorious. And we are in Music City, USA, Mike, as always.
But you know, I've got to just say.
We're ensconced.
We are in the B.B. McKinney Studios.
Yes.
But.
Historic.
Our producer is Lindsay Delp. Yes. She's on our marketing team.
She is.
And our engineer is Tim Henning.
Tim Henning.
But our marketing strategist, our top marketing person, is also in the room.
Yeah.
She has one job.
The suits are here.
She has one job.
Yes.
Bring the chocolate to the podcast recording.
That's one. I would say she has other jobs, but that is probably primary in her responsibilities.
Is there
and
chocolate?
She has failed.
Is there chocolate?
The B.B. McKinney Studios are less majestic than normal
because
the
chocolate
is not here.
And she's a Florida State alum, really
That's
proud
right.
Seminole. And so
not
usually
the first
the chocolate,
Florida State player to drop the ball.
No. Oh, thank you. But but she usually brings it in a ceramic bowl.
Right.
That's Chief Osceola.
Chief somebody. Yeah.
Chief Osceola, who's the Seminole mascot.
The mascot. Well, it's off season. So maybe that's part of the reason that they're having
maybe when football starts back.
Or maybe it was the chocolate was stolen by one of their former players. We don't know. Just kidding, Florida State fans.
But
a little levity there.
But they all right, so Amy Gagel, who is one of our big fans and they listen to all of our podcasts.
Right.
She's a Florida State girl, right?
Okay.
So Amy's listening right now and she's mad at us. But we love you, Amy.
We're just trying to keep Jameis Winston away from the chocolate. That's our goal.
He's in class. No, he wouldn't be in class either.
Not making some money these days. All right. But that's not why we're here, Mike.
That's not why
we're here. We are not here to talk about the Florida State Athletic Program.
We are talking about students.
And how deeply disappointed we are in our marketing strategist, Chastity, for not bringing chocolate. We're here to talk about students. And specifically student worship and why it's important. Now, Mike, We really shouldn't have to say why it's important.
No, we shouldn't.
Any of us, especially, you know, I know I met my wife on a choir tour is where we kind of fell in love. And we've been married 30 years, and that's not an unusual story, especially for kids like me who got married in the 80s when choir tours were all the rage. But that was a one expression of youth ministry.
I'll tell you
we're
going to
talk
thing.
About a bigger,
I'll tell you another,
a bigger picture today.
This is anecdotal.
Yeah.
But it would be fascinating to know how many pastors that are pastoring churches, and I mean pastors, not music guys, just music ministers of music. I'm talking about pastors.
Well, I'm a music pastor.
Exactly. But
yes, I know what you mean. Senior
whose
pastor.
First inclination toward ministry was on a youth choir tour.
It would not be surprising at all. It was at least for our generation.
A lot of them of our generation, because youth choir trips back in the day, many churches had ministers of music and youth.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was one of those.
Yes,
proud to say,
and I was too. But the student ministry of a church was usually all wrapped up in a music organization.
That happened very frequently.
Youth choir and the music minister, and so those choir tours would be mission trips.
That's right.
And you would sing a lot, but you'd do Bible clubs and all of those other things. Many churches still do that. By the way, one of my favorite things of ministry that I did back in the day when I was full-time on a church staff was those mission trips with my high school choir. I loved those moments. I had my kids in Texas. We went to Los Angeles, Chicago, Minnesota, D.C. We went a lot of places and did a lot of ministry. New Orleans, I'll never forget, we were in New Orleans just weeks before Katrina hit.
Wow.
And we had done a lot of construction work and a lot of concerts in some of the parts of that city that were utterly destroyed just weeks later. Mm. And some of my guys that had been on construction teams, like, do you mean to tell me the house that we built is gone? And it was, I'm afraid it was. But, the impact that churches can have on students is significant. And we really need to talk about this subject. I think it's an important
one. No doubt. And, of course, the flip side of that as well, Mike, the impact a vibrant student ministry can have on a church.
Thank you. Yes.
You know, there's things go in cycles, and I think there was a heavy emphasis, it felt like, on youth ministry when I happened to be a teenager. And it seems to me like in recent years, and there's all kind of research to back up why this is an effective strategy, it's been a heavy focus on kids ministry, children's ministry, and having the right kind of programs, the right kind of spaces where kids feel safe, all of that important to the life, health, and growth of a church. But I almost think it's just this natural tendency when you focus on one thing, you tend to not be able to focus as well on the other thing. And I think we've done a good job of shoring up our kids' ministries. But I do think it's possible to get so focused on that and focused on the other programs.
Well, I want to give a shout out
about your student ministry.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to our colleagues here at Lifeway in the kids and student area. Jana Magruder leads the kids team
director.
Here at Lifeway. And Ben Trueblood leads the student ministry team here at Lifeway. And they work so well together. They've created a conference called Etch that about the time this airs, that conference may have actually just happened.
Yeah.
But Etch is equipping the church and home, and they've actually created a conference experience where kids ministry and student ministry can think about a strategy together.
That's fantastic.
Where these kids, we don't lose these kids when they go into the sixth grade or when they graduate from high school, but a longer view of how do we disciple someone from childhood all the way to adulthood and do that strategically within a church. But today our focus is student ministry student worship particularly.
Right.
And man, you're right. It's changed. It's changed drastically.
Yeah, the music element of worship in a youth ministry has changed as music has changed.
Sure.
And I think as styles have changed and evolved, and technology has been a part of that, of course. One of the biggest reasons that drums are in many churches today is because technology allows them to
no
be,
question.
Whether that's sound dampening or actually automation.
Well, and I'd go further, Brian, to say, and I thought this is what you were going to say. One of the reasons those drums made it into the sanctuary is because of the youth musicals.
That's right.
Back in the 80s and 90s, as these churches started doing these musicals and they started bringing rhythm instruments into the sanctuary. Even before the 80s, I think about here at Lifeway, our great heritage here at Lifeway, a musical like Celebrate Life, Burl Red.
Right.
The first time I saw a set of drums inside a church building was when my youth choir, I was just about, probably eighth or ninth grade. But we were doing Celebrate Life, and those drums, I'll never forget walking into the sanctuary and seeing a drum set on the stage, and I almost fainted, couldn't believe it. But
nowadays, you faint if you see an organ on stage.
Exactly.
So things have changed.
Well, we're not really talking about stylistic change.
No, that's right.
I would point
out. But those style changes have an impact.
I would point out that, and we're in the podcast, aren't we? We're there in the subject. But I would point out that another thing that has changed about student music in churches is where it sits in the church's organization. As I said, back in the day, the minister of music was often the minister of youth, and music ministry and youth ministry, student ministry was really one thing in a lot of churches.
And I'm sure there are some churches that still operate.
I'm sure there are. There's no question. I mean, I know some that still have that because one person leads both. It's kind of centered in that approach, but increasingly, churches have isolated student ministry in their organizational structure. Sometimes they do it in their worship.
Yeah.
Sometimes the student ministry does their own thing in worship and goes to a different venue and do their thing. And very often the student ministry has I do know this, almost virtually every student ministry, no matter the size of the church, is going to have an event or something that happens every week in the schedule.
Right.
That is a worship experience for students.
Yes, that's right.
And even that Wednesday night, that's that Wednesday night experience or maybe a Sunday night experience where the students are by themselves, the student pastor or the student leader is going to speak, and there's going to be a music expression of some kind in that experience. And very often these days, that music experience and the preparation of it and the execution of it doesn't fall within the parameters of a music leader. It's very often a layperson or the student minister or his designee that is planning and preparing and leading, and very often it's students themselves.
Yeah. And often the student minister, Mike, is one who is more gifted in pastoral ministry than music ministry.
Right.
These days, and that's the significance of that shift, I think, in the way that a lot of people, where they locate their ministry, locate the youth in their ministry, when it was located under the music minister, there might have been a more heavy emphasis on music, and now maybe more associated with the preaching ministry or the pastoral ministry of the church. And sometimes it can lose that element. Like you say, that maybe they hand the musical portion off to a lay person if they don't understand it, or to the kids themselves. Yep. Maybe there's a kid who plays guitar and yep. you handle it. You
there's
know,
no question kind of that, that guy that has picked up a guitar and learned a few chords and likes to sing Christian music mm-hmm. could be leading worship in many of our churches yeah. on Wednesday night and doing the very best he can. But, boy, now we're getting to the point of something where I really have a burden.
Yeah.
And, I mean, isn't that the point, Brian, to talk about my burden?
Yes.
And that while we're
That's
here
why
today?
It's the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harlan.
Oh, thank you.
Burden.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, here's my burden, is that the student music experiences in many of our churches have dwindled and disappeared mm-hmm. and have now been reduced to just a few kids that are leading. And sometimes they're leading without really a proper direction musically,
right.
and it can really be less than what it ought to be.
Well, why does that matter, Mike? It's just the youth group meeting, and you know their music is different than ours anyway. And,
yeah,
know,
just
sing a few songs.
Matter?
Why does it matter if there's you know gifted or called leadership in the music area of a youth ministry?
Tim, do you want to take Brian's spot over there? Nah, you know I'm kidding. Well, it matters immensely. It matters for the same reasons it matters on Sunday in the large room.
Mm.
Music can be a distraction. It can be a powerful discipleship tool, for sure. But it can also be a huge distraction. And the distraction can happen on multiple layers within a student ministry. Here's one of the distractions that can happen in a student ministry around music. And that is this small group of students who happen to like to sing, who happen to like to play guitar. And in a typical setting, singing may not be a value that those students have at school or at church. And what tends to happen is it's just a small group of kids that are singing for the rest of the students. And they become isolated, almost become an elite group. They're the singers. They're the worship team, and rather than fostering an environment where all the kids are really participating together, it actually creates a small subgroup of the super youth
yeah.
that are on the worship team and the rest of the youth that stand and watch them sing every week.
Such a big problem, Mike, and it's so, you know, kids are dealing with that kind of class level cliques and all of those kinds of things, not just at school anymore, which is where we used to deal with it, but now they can't escape it when they leave school. There's the social medias, the Facebook,
yep.
they're constantly aware of what group they're in. They're constantly reminded by their peers of what group they've put them in,
yep.
and it's so much more important now than it ever has been that we avoid that kind of thing in a church group environment.
Totally. Yeah.
We cannot be reinforcing that. There's got to be some safe places for these kids to go.
Yeah. So here's what's happened in the culture. And just watch the TV lineup of every night, and you'll see this right in front of your eyes. We have this superstar mentality
yeah.
where it's American Idol, it's The Voice, it's The Panel, it's whatever this week's new thing is, where it's this giant talent show. America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent.
Celebrity-driven culture.
Celebrity-driven yep. culture. And the rest of us sit and watch these exceptional performers perform. And then there's a place for that in culture. I mean, we ought to admire artistry when it's and whatever it is. But here's the problem that creates in worship. You don't want a worship environment that is a celebrity-driven model where the few good singers are the ones that perform and the rest of us sit back and watch them do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not healthy spiritually. It's not healthy for the performer. Because they get a skewed view of who they are. They begin to equate
so
their
true.
Value with their performance, which is that is so destructive to the persona of a teenager.
They begin to equate their attendance with their performance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you are in a very observable way, you're communicating to the rest of the students that their participation is marginal or mm-hmm. optional and doesn't matter. And then, so you got all those dynamics. And then if we peel this onion down just a little further, what we often find in these churches is that what they're doing musically is not very good.
Right.
The guitar's out of tune. The songs are not well performed. You've got a rhythm section just beating the heck out of whatever instrument they happen to be holding in their hand, and it doesn't really make any sense. So it becomes actually a distraction to the worship experience of the people there, not an enhancement of it at all. And so this is an experience that's detrimental to the performers. It's not encouraging to the participants, and it creates a culture within a student ministry who really needs a healthy worship environment for their student ministry to have the experience they really ought to have. It creates this negative thing from something that could be amazingly positive. And then I've got to go one more layer, and then I'll take a breath, and we can take the conversation from there. And that is this as well. The Bible's admonition to sing is clear. As a matter of fact, when you study the text and the great text of the Scripture around singing, you begin to understand and you see that the reason God compels us to sing is because of the impact and effect it has on us and our worship. Matt Carter was our preacher this year at Worship Life in Gatlinburg, and he's a great, great speaker. And he has a whole lot to say about worship there at his church in Austin, the Austin Stone. They place a really high value on the discipline of worship, and they place a really high value on creating a culture of participation in worship, even though they've got tremendously talented artists that lead their worship. But they have a high value of people participating. And Matt preached Ephesians 5 and Colossians 3 and helped us understand, particularly from the Ephesians passage, that the process of singing is part of the equation of the filling of the Spirit. That when we sing, we are actually inviting God's Spirit to come and dwell in and fill us in our singing. And I know the skeptic out there might say, you haven't heard me sing, but because the Spirit runs when I sing, but that they miss the whole point when they think that this idea of singing being something that only singers should do is really unsupported by Scripture. Singing is something that all believers should do. And our student ministries, if we don't model that and frame it in a way that encourages participation, we're actually raising generations of worshipers that don't understand how vital their voice is to the song of worship from their church.
Yeah, Mike, that is so true. And it's a great reminder that the church has a responsibility in the area of music development. I think so many of our churches have outsourced that to the public education or the private tutoring. And the mindset is that the church doesn't really have a role or a responsibility there. These kids can be trained musically elsewhere and use that giftedness inside of the church. But there's big, big problems with outsourcing all of our music training.
I mean, I'm very, very passionate about this.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. If singing is not part of your spiritual experience is less than what God intended it to be. I want to say that again.
Well said, yeah.
If singing is not part of your worship is less than God intends it to be. Did I say you can't worship without singing? No, I didn't say that. And I would never say that because it's not true. But I'm telling you, singing is an essential component of a believer's life. Psalm 40 says that he put a new song in my mouth. Well, he didn't put the song in our mouth to stay there.
Yeah,
he put the song in our mouth to be sung, and we have generations of people that are now coming through their church experience, and they never learn. They might even learn why we sing,
right?
And they might even learn a theology about why we respond to God with our praise, but they don't learn how. And they don't learn how to sing, and they grow up and spend a whole life of adults watching singing happen, and in an artist-driven setting in many cases. And I'm telling you, the worship of the church is diminished when the congregation is full of people that won't sing.
And that's as true for youth ministries as it is
Absolutely.
For the greater congregational ministry. And it's no surprise that it's happening when you outsource all of the musical training to secular places like the schools or the universities, or to even private tutors who are all about musical excellence and instrumental excellence, maybe even performance excellence, but they're focused on the performance of the instrument for its own beauty and purpose so many times. And it's not put in the proper context of a worship service. And using your talent to that for those ends is a completely different thing than using it for strictly performance purposes.
So, Brian, let me go to a sports analogy. I mean, we're 20 minutes into this podcast, and I haven't given a sports analogy yet. So I've got to come in here and get something going.
But
imagine that the only people today playing baseball were the people that were on a major league roster.
Mm.
They're the only ones that played it. Nobody else played it. Nobody else ever picked up a bat, ever threw a ball, ever fielded a grounder. The only people that played it were the people on the major league roster. Well, how soon would baseball go away?
Yeah,
I mean, it would go away very quickly. Well, we've got a mentality in our churches that only the great singers should sing.
Mm.
But there are things learned on a baseball field when a six-year-old plays it that serve the rest of his life, Mm. What a tragedy it would be if we would say, well, the only people that ought to do this are, and pick any discipline you want to. Yeah. Let's say the only people that ought to ever draw anything have to be Michelangelo or have to be this Rembrandt. You know, nobody else should ever draw anything. Think about all the refrigerators that wouldn't have watercolor paintings on it. I mean, we've taken the singing discipline, and we've made it so much less than what God's intended it to be. And our people that we lead are the ones that lose. And that's why I'm so passionate about student worship. And this is kind of where we're coming to the point of all this.
What can we do about it?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
do we do in
well,
the church? We
and
find
it's,
ourselves
it's a
this.
Burden. You know, first of all, I challenge any church leader out there to have a strategy about how they're equipping their people to learn how to sing, not just why we sing, not just what we sing, but how we sing. And that happens in a kids choir.
Yeah.
It happens in a student ministry. And, you know, I understand that not every setting is going to have a student choir.
Right.
I would challenge that. I would say you could. Well, and some people say, well, I don't have anybody could lead it. We don't have enough kids.
Yeah.
But you can think of all the reasons not to do it. I would just encourage you to find some way to engage your students and your children in a singing experience. And the way that Lifeway comes alongside that is we create resources for younger choirs. We take these great songs that are contemporary. We'll put them in current styles. And I'm not talking about just one type of resource, but at lifewayworship.com, there's all kinds of charts and versions of songs that are very appropriate for younger voices. And I think about something like all of the Sun Power resources we've created through the years that are contemporary choir. Many of our anthems and our multi-gen line are designed for students and kids to sing with adults, and then on and on I could go. So we want to address it from a resource standpoint, but we also want to do it in podcasts like this where we call it out and talk about it. I've got a book that's coming out later this year that addresses some of these things about engaging the congregation and why people and how people should sing. I think about a book like Keith and Kristen Getty's book called Sing, where they give some really practical resources. And there's actually a Bible study that goes along with that can help a church understand this at a deeper level. I also think about an event like Sun Power. You know, Sun Power is an event. This year, we celebrated the 20th year of our Orlando event.
Hard to believe.
And there were a few years in there. We actually did one in San Antonio.
Yeah,
in San Antonio. I attended that before I was at Lifeway. I went to Sun Power in San Antonio with my middle school choir from my church. So Sun Power is an important part of our deal, and we've got an event around this whole idea of student worship and helping kids learn and get excited about using music in their spiritual journey.
And leaders. Yeah.
And so, but here's the exciting thing about Sun Power. Is after 20 years of being in Orlando, we're moving the event.
Okay.
And it's coming to Nashville.
Wow.
So next year in 2019, Sun Power.
2019.
Yeah, it will be.
It's a big announcement.
It's a big announcement. And,
wow.
And we've already said this in a few places, so some of these folks may have already heard this. But June 17th through 21st at the Sheridan Music City right here in Nashville.
Wow.
And we're going to do Sun Power, which is an event that is built around this idea of students developing their singing tool. Mm-hmm. And it can be a choir experience, but it also can just be a worship experience where individual students can come. You could bring your choir. You could bring an individual student or a group of students. We also have opportunities for kids to learn about being in a band and how to play instruments more effectively. So it's an event that's intended to help train youth and their leaders and students and their leaders to do worship better. And we really are trying to find ways that we can help student ministries improve the worship experiences of their students in that midweek event or whatever they might do in their ministry. And then the other thing about Sun Power, you can't talk about Sun Power without talking about missions.
Right.
Because real big parts of a student's experience when they're in high school, you know, there's a big lesson every one of us have to learn. And the lesson is that the world is bigger than we are. And that our little experience in our home and in our community as significant as it is in our life, as shaping as it is in our life, it's going to be some of those opportunities to go into points of mission contact with people that are maybe a little different than we are. Maybe in a service project or in a concert presentation, or a lot of ways that you can serve. And how important it is that students, when they get of that age where they're old enough to not have to be with mom and dad all the time, and yet they're mature enough to get on in a mission setting and teach a Bible story to a group of kids, or serve in a soup kitchen, or on and on. Many of our churches do this. Well, Some Power has that component.
Yeah,
where groups so and students can come and be part of a missions emphasis during the week. It just helps all of them learn firsthand that the world's bigger than them and that there are other people out there that need Jesus.
Well, you know, worship, we criticize sometimes for interchanging worship and music ministry, and they're not the same thing. Worship is so much more than just music. And when you do worship in a missions environment, it changes the way that you sing.
It does.
I mean, when you get involved on that level, when your worship extends throughout more than just the hour-long service on Sunday, but through every aspect of your life, your voice sings a different song, a different way, and I think it's a song that's more pleasing to God as you are living a life that serves Him and you're singing truth.
Well, the most important thing I want to say in this podcast is I want to call it out again, and there's people that are listening to our podcast that will say, oh, you've talked about this before. Yeah, and guess what? I'm going to talk about it again, too, probably in 10 more times, because I'm convinced this is one of the most important responsibilities we have as church leaders. You know, the Bible has a lot to say about this, about passing the baton generation to generation, about, you know, Moses talked about satisfy us in the morning. He's talking about when we are young, let us learn and be satisfied with your great love, and that we could worship you and praise you our whole life. Moses would say that in Psalm 90, and I think about Titus 2, and I think about Psalm 145, and I mean, we could go on and on talking about scriptures that talk about the importance of the generations passing down a heritage of worship and a heritage of praise, generation to generation. And it is something that is caught, and it's something that is taught. And I really hope our student ministries out there are helping our students not just find the why of their song, but also find the how and learn how worship becomes an essential part of their spiritual experience.
Oh, it could transform churches, Mike, in significant ways for generations into the future. Well, we hope you've enjoyed our discussion today about music and worship ministries and the youth group in your church. And we'd love to hear from you about your student ministry, how you incorporate the music and worship aspects into that, what has worked for you, and what things that you found successful in getting your kids more educated on how to sing and how to sing better. We'd also like to have you email us worship@lifeway.com and tell us how we can pray for your church, pray for your ministry. Maybe you need God to call a leader to your church who's skilled in this area, and we want to pray for you toward that end. And we also hope you check out our website, lifeway.com/events. Look for the SunPower event, lifeway.com/SunPower, and you can find out more information about the new event in 2019 that's going to be in Nashville. We'd love to see you all here, meet face-to-face, give you some training, give you some experiences, and then talk about.
Now, here's something I want to say about that to this audience. I just feel like I ought to tell you. We've been in Orlando all this time at that huge Orlando Convention Center and the Rosen facility Center, last few years. We've been in some other ones, and we basically didn't have a limit of space. We could take as many as would sign up. Yeah. I really get the sense that this move to Sheridan Music City, we're going to run out of space. I mean, there is a top number that we can't really register beyond. It's more than we had this year. I won't give the number out there, but I think that if you really want to have some of your students, and by the way, if you don't have a choir, bring three kids. Yeah. Bring one kid. We had a church this year that had one student that came from that church.
Praise God.
And another church adopted that student. Her mother came with her. It was beautiful to see that. But I would say register early, because I think we're going to run out of room. For some power, and I'd hate for our folks listening to the podcast to miss out on that.
Absolutely. So join us for Sun Power this summer, and again, join us at the Worship Life website. We'd also like you to join us at the lifeway.com/sunpower to find out about that event. Join us there. Until next time, for Mike Harlan, this is Brian Brown saying thanks for joining us on the Worship Life podcast. We'll be back to talk to you again really soon.